Hello and welcome to the Road to the Garden podcast. It's kind of a slow Monday night here in January. The NFL regular season winding down. We're slowly but surely everybody's turning their attention to college basketball. We're finally getting there. It's a good time with four ranked Big East teams right now.
This is what dreams are made of. This is what John Rothstein lives for. He's finally waking up. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What it's about. It's that time of the year a little bit earlier for me than for you. My New England Patriots eliminated from the playoffs yesterday in a heartbreaking fashion, giving up two kick return touchdowns. Tom, just before we get into the basketball, did you know there were six kickoff return touchdowns allowed in the NFL this year and the Patriots allowed three of them?
I did not know that. This is like a Pat's Pulpit crossover episode. I'm loving it.
I know, and that was it. Bleeding Green Nation. Is that the Eagles one? I think it is.
It is.
Yeah. Your Eagles doing a lot better than my Patriots.
Yeah, it's a good time of the year. We kind of slogged across the finish line towards the end, but hopefully this extra week of rest, a lot of our starters will get healthy, and hopefully we get Dallas, because I just want to really give it to them one more time.
We'll see how that goes, and when we do our show later this week, you will see there's an impact on the schedule for the Big East Saturday and Sunday just because of the NFL games. Lots of early games Saturday and Sunday, things a little bit more spread out. We got a Friday night game this week. Might be a bye week for the Eagles, but no bye week here in the Big East. We're getting right back into the action, but let's start here before we start, let me read our ad here. And then we're going to start by looking back at a Saturday slate that had five games. It was a fun Saturday. Just a reminder, we've teamed up with SeatGeek this season to get you the best deals for tickets to your favorite teams. SeatGeek takes the confusion out of buying tickets, and they're here to give you some great deals. Get in on the fun and head over to SeatGeek, download their app, and use code NCAA Hoops Digest for $20 off your first purchase. And also, this podcast is presented by House Enterprise and in partnership with House of College Hoops. Head over to our site, house-enterprise.com, for more info. Definitely make sure you guys check out the site. Let's get into this Saturday slate, Tommy. We had a couple of real interesting storylines here. Honestly, you can kind of pick where we start off with what we saw on Saturday.
Oh, I like that. Right in the driver's seat. Rewarding your kindness, let me pick first. I'm going to go ahead and start off with your Providence Friars playing a little bit of a closer game than I expected against this St. John's Red Storm. Talk about slogging across the finish line. St. John's is slogging through the middle of the regular season, but they competed with Providence. They were up at halftime, if I believe, but Providence really locked it in. Speaking of lock, no pun intended, Noah Locke looked outstanding in that one.
Yeah, it was no Jared Bynum for the Friars right now. Some kind of an abdominal injury. We don't know what it is. And I think especially going against that pesky St. John's backcourt that's really going to try to force turnovers, they missed having Bynum out there. They made enough work. I mean, they still scored 83 points in the game. Thought the offense looked mostly good. St. John's was just able to kind of capitalize and create a little bit of chaos for the Friars on defense. I'm not super surprised by that with the speed with which they play. And this is a St. John's team. They don't have good wins here or anything. There's a lot of losses. But let's not forget, like, St. John's played with Xavier last week. This is a team that has played with good teams before. I'm not super shocked. Ended up coming down to the wire with Bynum out. The Friars are now 6-0 to start Big East play, a six-game win streak, sitting there in the driver's seat of the conference at the moment, and a win is a win. I'm not reading too much into that, and it's really the fact that St. John's had a shot to get that done and couldn't pick up a win there is really tough for them, because that was a winnable game for the Red Storm, and yet again, we saw them have a lead at the half and not be able to finish it out.
Yeah, a win certainly is a win, and that's kind of St. John's MO. You were talking about it a little bit. They played scrappy defense, and although they still allowed 83 points, it was a little shaky at times. What's his face for St. John's? It's one of those nights, Matt. Good grief. Joel Soriano. Forgot the best player on St. John's name. Joel Soriano. He looked outstanding again. A double double. He's a double double machine. But yeah, Providence took care of business. They did what good teams do, and they're on to the next one.
Yeah, I'll also note there, Soriano looked really good. I thought he got the best of Ed Croswell after we saw Ed Croswell hold up very well against Adama Sinogo. There, one of the Providence coaches, though, said after the game, Croswell was kind of battling a flu of some kind during the game. So I don't think this is a Friars team that was really at full strength. No Bynum, Croswell fighting through that. And St. John's looked good, I think better than I expected. I thought they had a good bounce back game, but at some point, you need an actual victory and not a moral one. And the Friars come out with the actual one.
Moral victories don't count on the record, and St. John's knows that all too well.
Yeah, no, too many. And it's St. John's has some that aren't even moral victories right now. So this is a step in the right direction from what they were. Also, Curbelo played in this one, and AJ Storr got his first start. So some positive things. I think this is a step in the right direction for St. John's. Now they're going to get a home game against Butler. We're going to talk about later this week on Tuesday. And that becomes not just a must win, but you really want to blow them out if you want to start making your way in the right direction here. At the same time as that one, both two noon games here was the Creighton at UConn game, and saw UConn bounce back after the two losses, come back home, get a win, and Sinogo was dominant over Ryan Kalkbrenner for long stretches of this.
Yeah, did you see everything going on Twitter with the Ryan Kalkbrenner? What he said in the preseason interview? Yeah,
that was funny.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, Twitter's a hectic, chaotic, and amazing place all in one. But I was, to be quite honest with you, I was a little surprised how Adama Sinogo played. I guess I shouldn't be at this point. He's a Big East preseason player of the year for a reason, and I'd say probably the front runner for player of the year halfway through the regular season. But you saw him go against Eric Dixon, and like you just mentioned, when Sinogo went against Croswell, he didn't look his usual dominant self, and then he goes against the reigning defensive player of the year, and what does he do? Just puts up 26, 9, and an assist. I mean, on 50% from the field. So yeah. Adama Sinogo really forced his will in that one, if you will, and that was a key factor for UConn pulling out that win.
Yeah, Sinogo also knocked down as many three-pointers as the entire Creighton team did, which is never a good sign for how you're shooting. And I think this has really become a consistent issue for Creighton now. It's you go 2 for 16 on the road here, shooting the three ball. You're not going to win a lot of games doing that. And I know shot quality, I just saw they put out, they said this was a shot quality upset. They thought Creighton got better quality looks in this game than UConn did. And I think that's because they got good ball handlers. They got guys who can move the ball. Greg McDermott's good at scheming stuff up. At some point, you need guys to hit the shots. Last year, they had Alex O'Connell and Ryan Hawkins who could do it. Now, it's basically just Baylor Shireman. They need one of these sophomores to step up and become an outside shooting threat consistently. Otherwise, it's going to be up and down for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and I felt like Francisco Farabello could have been that guy. He's been fairly underwhelming so far this year. Another thing that's really plaguing Creighton has been plaguing them all year, especially when Kalkbrenner went out. Going through the box score here, all of their starters played 32 minutes or more in this one. No one else played more than 9 minutes. Especially on the road, that's going to be detrimental for this Creighton team. This lack of depth is really showing. And it was Farabella who played 9 minutes. He didn't take a shot in the 9 minutes he played. Neither did Mason Miller. It was
he pulled a Chris Arcidiacono.
Too soon. That one hits too close to home.
No, less minutes played for Farabella. But yeah, that's a great point. It's these are the five for Creighton that are supposed to be getting it done. And they're not a bad five. Like, they're a very good five. The problem is, right now, the Big East has four ranked teams. And I'm not sure that five is better than the top seven of any of the ranked teams in the Big East right now. And it's good enough to get wins. I'm not saying Creighton's going to get swept by that group. But one of our games of the week this week is Providence at Creighton. That one's going to be on Saturday. Huge opportunity for Creighton to get a home win here against a quality Big East opponent. and show that their five can compete with the depth that other teams have. But this is not the first. We saw this happen at UConn in this game. We saw this happen at Marquette, where they just didn't have another guy to go to. And you add on to that the fact that of their starters, only Baylor Shireman hit a three. Nembhard 0 for 3. Kaluma 0 for 3. Alexander 0 for 2 from deep. And it's, you just need those guys to be better than that if those are going to be your five.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Creighton has the starting five to be a ranked team and compete with all the, like any starting five, frankly, in the country. But I really like what you said about their starting five not matching up with the starting seven of that upper tier of teams in the Big East. But yeah, I voted for, we'll get into it a little bit later, but I voted for that Creighton Providence game, Providence at Creighton, to be my game of the week. That's going to be a really interesting. We're going to find out a lot about those two teams in that matchup.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we absolutely will. Also, so while we're going through this, UConn, they ended up dropping in the polls down to 6. They were at 4 before, so they're still hanging up there at the top. A lot of movement near the top of the polls right now. Alabama moving up, Tennessee moving up, Kansas moving up, Houston up. So yeah, they're still, UConn's still hanging around up there, and we'll see how they bounce back from this. Obviously, Creighton not ranked at this point. They did get some votes. I believe they had, yeah, Seth Davis has Creighton at number 22. I don't think anybody else has Creighton ranked right now. Yeah, what a crap, Seth Davis.
Yeah, what a crapshoot this top 25 was. I mean, I know House of College Hoops and House Enterprise did our top 25, and like 1 through 15 is like, okay, that 15 through 25 range, you could legitimately put 15 to 20 teams.
Yeah, it feels like 15 to 40 right now. Like basically anything from like the 4 line to the 10 line in a bracket, you can just kind of slot a bunch of teams anywhere and feel kind of decent about it. So yeah, it's kind of crazy there. Should we move on to our next game on Saturday?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, the next game that came up was Georgetown Marquette. Georgetown actually led this one at the half. You would have no idea of that based on the final score of 95-73. Marquette, they came on in the second half here. How about this for you? 15 assists for Tyler Kolek. 15. Marquette scored 32 points in the third quarter and 29 points in the fourth quarter to really just put Georgetown away. The shooting came together, and you end up getting 17 points from Cam Jones, 14 from Iguodaro, 12 from Stevie Mitchell, 10 from Chase Ross, and then a pair of nines from Sean Jones and David Joplin. Ben Gold, the freshman, gives you 8. We talk about depth. That's what Marquette's bringing to the table here yet again.
Yeah, I was at the Villanova game at the Fenerim Pavilion around the same time this game was happening, and I was kind of just walking around the concourse trying to figure everything out, get my papers all together. And they had the game on the big screen, and someone tapped my shoulder and said, "Would you look at that? Georgetown's beating Marquette at halftime." And I just laughed. I looked at the live line. Marquette was still like 9.5-point favorites at that time. Yeah. It was going to be tough without Mazzone and Murray. But yeah, that second half was one of the worst defense from what I've watched. I don't want to overreact too much. I didn't watch the whole thing in depth, but that had to have been one of the worst defensive displays in recent memory.
Well, and it's, I mean, with what we've seen from Georgetown, like you can kind of copy and paste that statement here once a week. Like it's just, that's what this team has been doing. And the offense can score for Georgetown. That's not really the issue. They can compete with teams scoring wise. They're giving up way, way, way too many points. Maybe one of these days they're going to get a cold night from the opponent and they're going to stay in it. But we have really yet to see them do that and turn it into a win now. And this is 26 consecutive tries in the Big East. And yeah, you mentioned the win probability there. KenPom never gave Marquette less than a 91.4% chance of winning the game. Even when Georgetown had that lead, it was still just, yeah, we still think, like, we'll spot Georgetown points. We still think Marquette's going to win this one pretty easily.
Yeah, and just looking around the conference, this is why I have Marquette above Creighton in my power rankings. Going through the box score here, they hadn't played more than 14 minutes. in this one. And they emptied the bench there at the end, it appears. But Ben Gold, 14 minutes. David Joplin, 16. Sean Jones, 21. Chase Ross, 22. You can go so on and so forth. But this Marquette team, man, I really like this Marquette team. If they can just keep doing what they're doing between that Shaka Smart patented defense, there we go, and their just talent and explosiveness on offense, if they can figure it out in March and keep this train moving, they are deep, they are talented, they are smart, and they have that veteran leadership that teams in March win with.
Yeah. This is a Marquette team that is now up to 15th in the country in KenPom. The defense, you would never guess this. Marquette's defense is actually ranked 78th in efficiency. So it's wow. Not near the top there, but it's 17th in steal percentage, 40th in turnover percentage, which is where they look. That's where they try to make their money. And the offense is 6th in efficiency. So what they're losing on defense, they're converting into offense. And points are points. It doesn't matter which end they're going at there. So if you're stopping points or you turn them into points or whatever, like you're getting steals, and that's working for them. There's a Marquette team that's clearly very good. 25th in the rankings. They sneak back in. I don't understand why this Marquette team ever left the rankings from what we saw. I think they've all clearly been a top 25 team for a bit here now, but they're back in.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a double, I think it was a double overtime loss to Providence.
Yeah.
On the road in conference play early in the year. I don't think that deserved them to get dropped out, but yeah, you see what happens week in and week out with that 15 to 25 part of the AP top 25. I'm looking on KenPom. Marquette's ahead of Xavier. Xavier's red hot. Not in the AP top 25, but on the KenPom rankings. I have Xavier at 18 and Marquette at 15. That's real interesting.
Yeah.
I'm even higher on Xavier.
And take a look there too. You're going to see Creighton is actually one spot ahead of Xavier as well. Big East currently has four teams in the top, 18 in KenPom, and five in the top 30 when you go out to Providence. So yeah, this is a top heavy Big East at the moment. A lot of good teams there. And then you start to see a drop off. And I think this is where we move to our next game, Tommy. And I'm going to need your perspective on this. Xavier goes into the Fin and wins at the Fin for the first time ever. It's only the third win that Xavier has had at Villanova since realignment. And it's the first win for Xavier at Villanova since 1956. So Xavier getting a lot off their backs here. Villanova's second loss at the Fin, something that hasn't happened here in a couple of years. The last time, I believe, was 2017 or 2019 when Nova lost to Michigan and Furman at the Fin in the same year. I think that was 2019. I believe that was right after the championship.
Yeah.
So what's going on with the Wildcats?
I don't know. They're being written off right now by a lot of people, and I understand why. I mean, they deserve to be. Their record right now just is not great. They don't have a signature win. They have some shady losses, but they've dropped three of their last four, albeit to three of all three of those losses were to ranked opponents, even though two of them were at home, like you pointed out. But I don't know. I don't know if Justin Moore is going to come back anymore. It's go time for these Villanova Wildcats. Talking about the Xavier game, I never really understood that line in the Xavier game. Villanova was right around 2-point favorites that whole time, and call it history, call it what you want. Xavier's red hot. Their offense is outstanding. They have one of the best offenses in the country, top five on KenPom. And Villanova's defense is abysmal. It's terrible. It's the worst it's been in as long as I can remember. Maybe ever. I don't know. We got to get our researchers on that. But I don't know. Running out of time for my Wildcats. It's tough right now.
This is not a familiar spot here for Villanova, being in this position. And it's really, if we're talking about an at-large bid here still, Nova's going to need to, at this point, probably pick up three or four big road wins and stay perfect at home for here on out. Because right now, if you look at the resume, Villanova is 0-5 against quadrant one, 1-1 against quadrant two, and 1-2 against quadrant three, which is probably, you can overlook the lack of quad one wins if you're perfect below it. But they have a 2-3 record in quadrants two and three. And that's probably the most damning part. And some of that happens with Whitmore out, but you can overlook that if they pick up the big wins that force you to overlook that. But that mm-hmm. the path just gets more difficult when you lose the home ones, because winning on the road is so much harder.
Yeah, they're 8-8 right now, 2-3 in the conference. These next four games are going to have to win, and they can win these next four games. DePaul, Butler, Georgetown at St. John's. Those are four very winnable games. And then the season's on the line with the next three. They're if they want to contend for an at-large bid, they're going to have to win two out of these three games, and I don't know where they're going to come, because we have Providence at the Wells Fargo Center, then Marquette at Marquette, and then we're away at Creighton. So, I mean, going into this Providence game at the Wells Fargo Center, we could realistically – Villanova could be 12-8 and 6-3 in the conference, which would look decent. I think that Cam Whitmore is finally hitting his stride. You saw in that Xavier game, he had 26, I believe. I got to look at the box score here. But he looked really good. Yeah, he had 26. He looked really good, the best cutter in the country in analytics. And I think if he's hitting his stride, it could be huge for this team.
Yeah, and they're going to need that. I think what Villanova is going to end up needing here to make the dance is to basically they are the middle team in the Big East at the moment. And that means they need, I think, to sweep the five teams below them. So that right now is Georgetown, DePaul, Butler, St. John's, Seton Hall. You need to find 10 wins there. And you're going to need at least two wins from the teams above you. And what you'd really be looking for there is right now it's a win against UConn. So you can get that at home. I think that would be huge. Win against, you don't have the Xavier one, the Marquette one's out, so it's Creighton or Providence, assuming you don't win road games. And that gets you to 18 wins and 12 wins in Big East play. That's kind of the minimum right now for Villanova to get into back into this conversation. And there's only so many opportunities to do it. We'll see if Justin Moore comes back, what it looks like. You'd mentioned the defense in there.
Terrible.
The last time the defense was this bad was 2012. And the team went 13-19 that season, 5-13 in the Big East. That's the last time Villanova missed the tournament. And seems like we're headed that way at the moment. It's a Villanova offense that's ranked 25th in efficiency. And if it makes you feel better, Villanova set the free throw percentage record last year and is currently shooting free throws at an even higher clip. Villanova made 83% of their free throw attempts last year, just now at 85.7. So they could set the record here in back-to-back years. That's a nice silver lining.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where we're going to fit that banner in the fin, but yeah, the offense really isn't bad. The defense is where this team is struggling, and there has to be shake-ups in this lineup. I know it doesn't look good with Jordan Longino at media availability today. Kyle Neptune told reporters that he's out this week against DePaul and then against Butler on Saturday or Sunday, someday on the weekend. But he also said the team was going to release an official statement regarding Jordan Longino in the coming days. And when have you ever heard that and the statement been positive news? That's ominous.
Yeah. And it's, if there's no Longino here, then it's, you're rolling with the guys you have. And I mean, I thought Mark Armstrong had some nice moments this week, but he was rough here against Xavier. I mean, 26 points from Whitmore and 23 points from Caleb Daniels, and you're 19 from Eric Dixon, and you get 12 from the rest of the team. It's crazy because we're talking about how the offense hasn't been the issue, but Longino goes out and everything else dries up. Mark Armstrong has been not as good as anticipated. Brandon Slater, I don't think, has kind of taken the leap here that people thought he would. I think he's been as inconsistent as he's always been, unfortunately. And then Brendan Housen, Trey Patterson, they're not giving you anything here.
No, Housen, I think he's missed his last 6 3-pointers, which I mean, we can go to an open gym and watch him make 90 out of 100, so that's really uncharacteristic. What really bugs me, and I've been a fan of his, I'm going to continue to be a fan of his, and I mean, it doesn't mean that he's immune to criticism. Chris Arcidiacono, for as much as he gives you in the leadership role, protecting the basketball, playing stingy defense, diving for loose balls, whatever, he played 22 minutes. He took two shots. He didn't make any. 0 points in 22 minutes. When he drives to the lane, no one thinks that he's going to go up with the ball. He is a liability on the offensive end right now, and something needs to change, whether that be inserting Mark Armstrong in the lineup and having Arch come off the bench for that veteran leadership. But as good as he is on defense, his offense is not good enough to counteract that.
Yeah, and the plan here was kind of Chris Arch can provide a stable floor, and you hope that Longino isn't a point guard, but he's in the backcourt involved there between Armstrong, Housen maybe doing a little bit, maybe you get something from Brizzy. Like, you figured, all right, you'll be able to patch up enough in the backcourt to make things work, especially with Caleb Daniels right there, who in theory can run the point. You're able to do just enough so that you can hold it together until Justin Moore gets back, and it has not been enough. And Chris Arch also is not a fantastic defender out here either. He's not awful, but he's not an elite athlete, and you're going against elite athletes in the Big East.
Yeah, I'd like to see a lineup change, inserting Mark Armstrong into that lineup. His role has changed. He started the year off the bench, and he was inserted as a starter. Armstrong misses, and then now he's back to the bench, and he can't find a rhythm doing that. He needs to be the everyday starting point guard. Have Chris Arch mentor him off the bench. I don't know. I don't get paid to make those decisions, but something needs to change. Chris needs to step up on offense, or needs to come off the bench.
Yeah. Well, and the other part here is too, if you're relying on a freshman point guard to be the savior for your team, you're probably going to be having a tough time. There isn't a freshman point guard out there who's doing great. The guys they got at Xavier there on the other side of the court, they're backups. Like at Providence, Bynum goes out, and Jaden Pierre played minutes. He looked fine, but he's not a starter right now. You go around the conference, you're not going to find a single freshman point guard, true freshman point guard out there, who's capable of giving you 25 to 30 quality Big East minutes. So I think roster construction is probably part of this here. But again, I think you'd also say, wouldn't you rather just have Caleb Daniels be your point guard and you're going to put in a shooting guard or somebody?
Yeah, and part of this goes with the fact that, I mean, you know what you have in Chris Arch. It feels like he's been here for 40 years already. And you haven't seen Mark Armstrong's full potential. I mean, this kid was a stud. He was a four-star, played on the same FIBA U18 team that Cam Whitmore did, that took home the gold in the summer. Mark Armstrong's a hell of a point guard. I think I'm the leader of his fan club at this point, but I think I would make that known starting Armstrong than at this point, what does Villanova have to lose?
Yeah.
They don't have anything to lose. They have everything to win. So
you got to figure out something here. That's the name of the game. There's no more waiting. There's not a lot left in this leash right now. So you gotta start going. We'd be remiss to do this whole thing without talking about how good Xavier was too, just in that environment. Zach Fremantle, man, we keep talking about him, comeback player of the year in the Big East, and I don't think it's close the way he's played this year. He was named Big East Player of the Week. 29 points for him, 10 of 15 from inside the arc, perfect from deep, 2 for 2. He gives you 11 rebounds there. And Xavier had two guys here with double doubles, because Sule Boom had 22 and 10 as well. And I mean, both of those guys have wildly exceeded my expectations.
Fremantle was outstanding. I mean, he was getting whatever he wanted. It was early in the game, the first couple possessions. They just fed it to him in the post, bang, layup, over and over again. And then at the end of the game, I don't know how you leave him open. That dagger that he hit from the top of the key, I don't know how you leave Zach Fremantle open right there. He had in the gym range that day, and I mean, he is just outstanding. And yeah, shout out to Sule Boom. We were talking about him for transfer of the year. He's contending for player of the year now in the Big East. He blew my mind way over expectations.
For right now, for me, in a lot of ways, it's kind of a three-man race for player of the year between Sule Boom, Bryce Hopkins, and Adama Sanogo. Hopkins would get my vote at the moment because we saw him go head to head there with Sanogo a lot during that game, and I thought he came out on the better end. But I don't think there's a wrong pick between the two of them, and Boom is kind of a very close third there. And you could put Fremantle in that conversation as well. It's incredible how well those guys have played. There was one more game Saturday night we can move on to. This was Butler at Seton Hall. We talked about this being kind of a must-win game for both teams, especially if we talk about Nova keeping their tournament hopes alive here. Butler and Seton Hall are actually higher than Villanova in the net right now. Butler and Seton Hall each have a quad one win, something Villanova does not have. And Seton Hall, when Seton Hall is on, Seton Hall can be such a good team. I'm not convinced how good this defense is, but when this defense goes up against a mediocre offense, it will just completely shut it down.
Yeah. Yeah, you saw that against Rutgers. They scored 45 points and won the game. I don't think I'm ever going to get over that.
No, that was like you'll play the game. Is this Big East basketball or Big 12 football?
Honestly. Yeah. One, before we move, just one quick last note, something funny I found on KenPom, and then we'll completely nix the whole Villanova thing. I'm looking at the expanded player page on player stats, and it has their offensive rating, percent of possessions, percent of shots. Mm-hmm. And they have it narrowed down to major contributors, role players, limited roles, and nearly invisible. On offense, Chris Archidiakono is in the nearly invisible category. Below Angelo Brizzi, who's no longer on the team, and in the same tier as Trey Patterson, if that gives you any idea of his downside on the offensive end.
Which is it's incredibly impressive that Villanova has put together a top 25 offense in efficiency, essentially playing 4-on-5 at that end.
Yeah.
Which is, again, that's like, it gives you optimism for Nova, because if you can find a guy to fill that fifth spot consistently at all, this team should be able to take off a little bit, make up the ground they lost. I don't know, but put together a winning record in Big East play, that it's absolutely on the table here.
That was just funny.
Yeah. Seton Hall took the late game on Saturday against Butler 76-51. They ran Butler out of this gym pretty much immediately, and this is, God, we've been talking about this with Butler. This is something we've seen. We'll hang with the team for the first 5 minutes, and then the other team goes on a run, and it's over. It was a 12-2 run in this case for Seton Hall. It was 25-11, a little bit over 10 minutes into the game, and that's your ball game. That's how it went. Tyree Samuel, 19 points. Trey Jackson, 15. Alamir Dawes, 12. Kadari Richmond, 11. All guys contributing there, and Jaden Taylor and Manny Bates, the only guys in double figures. A lot of bad numbers for Butler on offense.
I'm literally looking through the box score as we speak, trying to find a good number on offense. And it's not even like funny to laugh at. Like I there's nothing.
It's just Manny Bates, 11 points on 6 field goal attempts. That's really good. Jaden Taylor had 14 points on 7 shooting. 14 points on 14 shooting attempts. It's 14 points. It's not an efficient 14 points. And he only made 3 field goals. 6 of those points came from the line. And Chuck Harris gives you a single point. Seamus Lakosius gives you 1 point. Eric Hunter gives you 3. You're getting 5 points from that trio. You're basically starting backcourt there. You're not going to win games.
Yeah. Going through the Seton Hall box score, one guy I really like in the conference off the bench, I think is a very underrated piece, Seton Hall team, and Seton Hall could take it to that next level if he starts playing well, is Trey Jackson. He had 15 points on 5 of 7 shooting and was perfect from deep on 3 attempts. I really like this guy off the bench with the Dre and Tay Davis duo. The Seton Hall team's deep, and everyone knows their MO is defense, but if these guys can start contributing on offense, the Seton Hall team could compete with any team in the conference.
Yeah. See, Seton Hall is one of those teams that they can ruin your day on a good day. And they're like Marquette in that they're deep. The players just aren't as good. They don't have as many shot makers. The defense isn't as connected as I think you would like it to be all of the time. You get really inconsistent performances from these guys. They're just across the board. This is Marquette, but older and more inconsistent. And that's not a good combo here, because you'd like to see, ideally, you'd say, okay, well, we see inconsistencies. We'll bring the guys back next year and another year in the system, and this will work. And that's not really, for the most part, not going to be the case here for Seton Hall. They're going to have to bring a whole new roster next year, which I think they'll also kind of need. A lot of upperclassmen here. But we'll see. Seton Hall now at 9-8, 2-4 in the Big East. Schedule gets a little bit easier. The next two games with Georgetown and DePaul. So they can be at 500 in Big East play by mid-January, and you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think I said this on the last pod, but I feel like Butler and Seton Hall are two teams in this conference that are in that lower third, but could compete with any of, like, there's going to be one game, maybe late January, early February, like, just some random game when Seton Hall plays a Creighton, a Providence, a Marquette, and they beat them by like 2 or 3 points. And it's like, what the hell happened there? It's going to happen. Seton Hall is capable of doing that. And that's a credit to Shaheen Holloway, what he's doing.
Seton Hall right now too is ahead of Villanova by a couple spots in KenPom, ahead of Villanova by quite a bit in the net. And we say Villanova kind of slots into the middle of the conference. That's also kind of with a little bit of a baked in assumption that this is a different team since Ken Whitmore was there, and we're discounting some of the early stuff a little bit. But Seton Hall's whole body of work here it's kind of inarguably better than what we've seen from Villanova so far. So, like, we talk about how Villanova needs to beat the teams below them. You need to put Seton Hall below you here. There's a competition, and Seton Hall's at 59 on KenPom right now. If this team can notch some wins, they're right in that same position as Villanova. Seton Hall gets to 11 or 12 Big East wins. They got a shot at an at-large bid here, a real shot.
Yeah, which is crazy to say after that start.
Yeah, it really is. And we'll see what happens. Obviously, yes, still got to play the games. And speaking of the games, I think we're going to look forward here. And we got 5 games, Tuesday and Wednesday. We're going to go through all of these real quick. I know for anybody listening live, this is the Monday night show. We're going to get you in and out of here real quick before the college football national championship starts. So we're just going to kind of speed through these. Especially the Tuesday games. I think Wednesday has a little bit more interesting of a slate. Tuesday night starts with a more interesting one, probably the most interesting of the night. 6:30 p.m. in Queens, Fox Sports 1, Butler at St. John's. Butler just gets absolutely blown out at Seton Hall. You're staying in the New York metro area. This is a must-win for both teams. Is that fair?
You just took the words right out of my mouth. This is a must-win for both of these teams.
You got to do it. Both of these teams they have a dream alive to make the tournament if they go on a run. The odds are lower for these two than Villanova and Seton Hall at the moment, but Butler has that win over Kansas State, which looks really, really good, and St. John's just has a lot of wins. I think St. John's at home really, really needs this one.
Yeah, they're 8-2 at home this year, and they started the year 11-1. They're 11-6 now, and I talked about it on the last pod, two pods ago, that there's a realistic chance that St. John's could drop 8 in a row just with the schedule they have, and this is the one that they needed to win. I think this is more of a must-win for St. John's than it is for Butler, because St. John's started the year a little bit hotter than Butler did, and I don't know. Thinking about it now, I don't know. Because Butler, this game has my head in the pretzel, Matt.
St. John's has been worse. St. John's has been better at home. Butler's been worse on the road here. Butler's going to have a shot. Butler might make this interesting. I think this is one St. John's ends up pulling out. Butler and Seton Hall, Butler and St. John's feels like a series that gets split with the home team winning each one.
Yeah. Yeah, I am also going to take St. John's in this one.
Yeah. All right, we'll move on to the 8:30 window here. Seton Hall at Georgetown. This is a can't lose for Seton Hall. Do we think Georgetown's going to be able to build on something a decent first half against Marquette and break the streak, or are we looking at 27 now?
27 now. Yeah, give me Seton Hall in this one. I don't really have much more else to add onto this. I'm going to pick against Georgetown unless they play Louisville in like, and that's even like in every game Patrick Ewing's gone.
Yeah.
Primo Spirit, man. I mean, it was just free him. Just free Primo Spears. He is so talented on the offensive end. He's averaging 15.6 and 5.3 assists for Georgetown this year. I don't know if Brandon Murray is going to be playing in this one. Is he clear to play? Did you see anything on that yet?
I don't know. And that could be – I mean, he's a really good player. Georgetown has some really nice young talent on this team. It seems like this team is not good, but it seems like they should stumble into a win at some point with that much talent and enough opportunities. I don't think it happens Tuesday night. It would not shock me because the offense has been good enough. They might be able to get some points on Seton Hall, and that Seton Hall offense has been really anemic from game to game. I'm going to take Seton Hall until – like, I'm not picking Georgetown until we see Georgetown win a game. I'm just not doing it. But
yeah,
I wouldn't shock me to see them win.
Yeah, I'm in the exact same boat. I wouldn't be too surprised if they pulled this one out. But yeah, I just can't in good faith pick Georgetown.
Yeah, last game Tuesday night, Nova at DePaul. Villanova hasn't lost to DePaul since 2008. Like we said for Seton Hall, this is I can't lose. For Villanova, this is the 9 o'clock game on CBS Sports. This is the real late window there, and DePaul is going to be looking for blood to pull an upset here. Do you think they do it, or does Villanova bounce back?
Villanova bounces back, and obviously I'm biased. They're just talented. DePaul's too banged up on Genda, and Murphy are still out. I don't know. DePaul's, I am higher on DePaul than I am than most people. I really do. But they have a lot of issues on the defensive end. Not that Villanova doesn't. I just think Villanova is too talented to drop this one on the road.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that one. Even if Longino is out, Villanova is still in a better injury situation, I would argue, than DePaul, or at the very least the same injury situation. And these teams are as a huge talent differential, and it would take something special for DePaul, I think, to win this one. But again, it's these two late night games on Tuesday. When you get the late night Tuesday games on the road at teams that really have nothing to lose and are looking for a big win and looking to ruin your season, these are the types of games that it's easy to let your guard down. So this is that point in the year where you start to think you have it all figured out, and then a result happens that really makes you really shakes that, and something happened on Tuesday night could do that. We'll see. We'll move on to Wednesday night. Wednesday night has two kind of game of the week caliber games going on, both at the same time. There's a 7 o'clock on FS1 and a 7 o'clock on CBS Sports. We'll start with FS1 here because I like FS1 more. It's Creighton at Xavier. So I want to point. So Xavier here is undefeated in Big East play. Creighton, and the other game here is UConn at Marquette. Between Creighton, Xavier, Marquette, UConn, and Providence, that group, the only losses in Big East play from that group have come on the road against other teams in that group. That's the top tier in the Big East right now, those five teams. So, with Creighton and Xavier, is this one where we might see the road team finally get a win in this group of basketball teams?
I love Xavier in this one. I don't think so. I think Xavier's red hot. I mean, I have the best team in the conference right now, to be honest with you. They do it all on the offensive end. It's going to be tough for them to clamp down on the defensive end, but they match up pretty well with this Creighton team. Nungy and Fremantle in the post are going to present a lot of issues for Kalkbrenner on the offensive end. And Creighton's just not that deep. To win on the road, you need a mix of talent and depth, and they have one of those things. But Xavier, man, Xavier, I was very impressed by them. I'm taking them in this one.
Yeah, I look at this. This is Creighton has a really good defense. So I'm intrigued to see how it matches up against Xavier. But Xavier shoots really well at home, and the strength of Creighton's defense is making sure that teams don't get second chance looks and clogging the paint. 3-point defense, if there's a weakness of this team on defense, it's probably 3-point defense. I think this is a horrible matchup for Creighton because of that. And I think this turns into a 3-point shooting competition. If that's what this becomes, I don't see a world in which Creighton is able to keep up unless they're having a really good night here. And I'm never gonna, especially after what we just saw on the road at UConn, I don't think we're getting that here either. They're gonna get some good looks. Maybe it happens. Maybe Baylor Shireman goes off. But they're gonna need more than just Shireman going off, I think, to stay with Xavier.
Yeah. Yeah, you just took the words right out of my mouth again. I was gonna say if Creighton wants any if Creighton's going to pull this one out, Baylor Shireman's going to have to be the catalyst in that one. And I'd like to see Arthur Kaluma be a little bit more aggressive here. He's been really good on the glass recently. I think if he can impose his will on the glass, that would go a long way for this Creighton team on the road.
Yeah. I will say the weakness of the Xavier defense this year has also been the 3-point defense. So maybe this is a game where Creighton is able to shoot the ball. I think it's a one where they have to be able to shoot the ball to compete. And I don't think they're going to be able to do it. Even if they do, I don't think they're able to get over the hump here. So I'm going to take a save here. I think it'll be not a blow. I think it'll be a 10 plus point victory, but no matter what, I'm taking Xavier.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going Xavier by 5 to 10 here.
Yeah, this is a Xavier team now, by the way, that's moving up in the polls. What are they now? Number 11, I believe, if I have that correct.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so Xavier moving on up, taking advantage of some other teams losing there. And you get a big win against Creighton, and you're going to be moving up a little bit higher. Or sorry, they're at 12, not 11. Oh, Kansas State's 11. Xavier only 6 spots behind UConn right now, and with that head-to-head win. So things get... with a couple more wins from Xavier, things get very interesting in the AP poll. We got one more game to preview for you, and it's UConn at Marquette. 2 ranked teams here, number 6 at number 25. Marquette has not lost a home game in regulation since playing UConn to kind of open up Big East play at home last season. And this is as intriguing a matchup as I think we might be getting this week.
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be a good one. I'm really excited for this one. Marquette over the last 2 games has been a team that hasn't played their best in the first half. I mean, you saw what they did again. They scored 61 against Georgetown in the second half or something crazy. Like, I know it was over 60. They were losing to Villanova in the first half at the Fin, and now they're back at home. They're back in the Fiserv Forum. UConn coming in, I mean, in the beginning of the year, it looked like UConn was the best team in the conference. Everyone else was just going to play for second place. They look vulnerable now. KenPom doesn't have Marquette winning this one. It's 75-73. It is close, but I do. I really like the mix of depth and scoring on the offensive end. If they can find someone to quiet Sanogo down, which I think they can, I got Marquette at home.
I'm going to go with UConn here only because I think they're kind of due for a good road performance. They haven't had one. Dan Hurley is a good enough coach to, I think, get that out of his team to be able to overcome some stuff on the road. This team should have some toughness. And the matchup to highlight is going to be Marquette with the 6th ranked offense against UConn with the 4th ranked defense. And that's going to be the heavyweight battle. But I think what kind of becomes important here is that UConn also has a top 10 offense. They're 9th in efficiency. Marquette is 78th in efficiency. They gave up quite a few points to Providence. It's a Marquette team that has had issues with fouling like we saw in the game against Providence. And I look at the way UConn likes to attack in the paint, especially through Sanogo. And I think they're going to be able to find some success there. I think Sanogo is better than Iguodaro, and I think he'll win that matchup. I also think that this is right now a Marquette team that doesn't have the Bryce Hopkins type guy who can go at Caravan and take him out of the game. And I think that's one where I could see UConn hitting some threes, getting going early. Marquette starts cold, and UConn's able to build a lead here at some point. I will say the one tripping point here for me on UConn, turnovers. Have to protect the basketball in a game like this. That's got to be priority number one when you have the ball.
Yeah, one matchup I'm interested to see in this one is going to be Stevie Mitchell off the bench. Whether he be on Andre Jackson or Tristan Newton, whoever he may be on. Stevie Mitchell is a defensive specialist. I think that UConn, I mean, it's always hard to score in the five-serve forum. I think Stevie Mitchell makes it incredibly hard to score anywhere. But yeah, to your point, the Adama Sanogo and what does somebody call it in the Slack? The Klingogo? Playing yeah. And Sanogo on the floor at the same time. That strategy might work. I mean, looking at this roster, David Joplin, 6'7", 220, 6'11", 220 from Ben Gold. I mean, of course, there's Omek, 6'8", 230, but they don't have that 7'2", or that someone who's just a bruiser in there. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to go as far as Adama Sanogo takes them in this one, and I'd have a handful of players in the country that I would rather have leading me into battle than Adama Sanogo.
Yeah, I will say Tristan Newton, I think, is the other guy I want to highlight here just because I think he has to have a good game. If he's having a rough time passing and distributing and getting things going, and he's getting his pocket picked by some of these Marquette guards we're talking about, then UConn gets in trouble here. Double big intrigues me. I could see UConn also play a ton of small ball here and feel pretty good about it with the way they crash the glass. Because there's, other than Igudaro, I think they can get away with some of these guys. We'll see what happens. This is the CBS Sports game, 7 o'clock Eastern. You're gonna get your dual screen setups now. You're gonna have two games here at 7 o'clock. So I'm gonna have that. I got my monitor over here. I'm probably gonna have one game on my computer, one game on my monitor. Watch them both at the same time. I'm hyped for it. Yeah, there we go. This is why you should subscribe to our YouTube channel so you can get the video and you can see what Tommy's desk looks like.
You can see it's Eagles confetti from the Super Bowl, Mr. Patriots fan.
Oh, that game didn't happen. just a reminder that what's his name? Clement, the running back.
He was inbounds.
But that's a catch by the rules they started using the next year. Not that I'm bitter or anything.
This is a story for another pod. This was wrapped up.
yes. All right, we're going to get out of here. We'll see you, I think, probably Wednesday night after that pair of games to recap whatever goes on in that one. An exciting pair of games there. And we got one game Friday, two Saturday, two Sunday. We'll be previewing on that one. So make sure to come back in and tune in. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe wherever you're listening to this. And we'll see you Wednesday night. Thanks, everybody. That's Tommy Godin. I'm Matt St. Jean. Thanks for listening.